Come on.
Okay, so we're on Proverbs 5, and let's open with prayer. Father, thank you for your goodness to us, your grace that you've shown to us every day. We'd ask you would be with us now as we look into your word. Speak to our hearts, in Jesus' name, amen. All right, John, you want to start reading on this one?
Sure. This is the, as Dylan pointed out, the peril of adultery. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, and your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one, lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction and my heart despised correction? I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be only your own and not the strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he shall go astray.
Yeah, very good. Well, let's review this in a little more depth. You said, Dylan said this was the parable of...
No, the peril of adultery.
Peril of adultery. Okay. Yeah, and I think what's interesting about this chapter is that, the Ten Commandments say that one of the, I don't know which one it is, says thou shalt not commit adultery. But here, the writer of the proverb is going in depth and telling, really showing you why it's a very bad idea, although it could be a very great temptation.
Yeah. Because as verse 3 says, the lips of an immoral woman drip honey.
Yeah.
That's beautifully said. And
yeah, her mouth is smooth.
Right on.
Yeah.
They say things that are very attractive and, as you said, tempting.
Yeah.
But not only is it a violation of God's law, yeah, but you'll find that when you are with a woman like that, the fact that she can be immoral, I guess the very thing that attracts you is the very thing that is going to be destructive in the mm-hmm. end as well.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, because she's obviously immoral by yeah. nature. And so if you do wind up in a relationship with her, she's going to probably continue to be immoral when she's with you,
yeah,
which is going to be a snare and a trap.
Right.
That's why I think later on he says, my iniquities entrap me, because it's what...
Right.
First,
be trapped in his iniquities, right?
Yeah, it's like those poisonous spiders in the Amazon. They look like a beautiful flower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And when the insect goes close to investigate it, that's when it gets caught in its web and destroyed. Yeah. And I think it's the same exact thing. They're very attractive. Their mm-hmm. lips
yep.
Drip honey, and their mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood.
Right. Right. I think that's also related to what James says when he talks about temptations and how it's your own, what's in your own heart that leads you into temptation. It's not God who's leading you into temptation. And that relates, I think, to verse 22, where it says the wicked man will be trapped in his iniquities. The iniquities are, first of all, in you. You're looking for, in other words, it's not like the immoral woman is literally trying to trap somebody who has no interest in what she's offering. There's an element that's in
that's the well
individual
said.
Too.
There's yeah, she's not performing a sting operation.
Right, right. No, you, it's yeah. or you're guilty too. It's some, you're dissatisfied with your own marriage. You're very open to all the things that she professes to be the things that you don't have and want, you know, which are all lies, but you're looking for it. You're open to it.
Or even, yeah, there's a lot of different,
there's a lot of different things
nuances.
Say about this.
You could be, even if you're not dissatisfied with your marriage, even if you're single.
Yeah.
There could be a married woman.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Who is doing the same thing. And
absolutely.
That's just as, that is just as destructive yes. and dangerous.
Yeah.
But you're right. I thought that was well said, that there's this active participation
active
on both
cooperation
parts. It's not that
part.
You're yeah. walking through the jungle and you just get, you know, pounced on. You're right. you're intrigued by it, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll
right.
say.
Yeah, you're open to that. Right. And that's
yeah.
why this is good warning, you know, to really think about it. I mean, you may be dissatisfied because you feel your wife doesn't love you, but does she? You know, this other woman?
And they always say that the woman who cheats, what is it? The woman who cheats with you will cheat on you or something
oh, yeah.
like that?
Yeah.
Right. It's true. And that's why. It's like, well, if whatever, however she behaved
before is
courting.
Chances are it's going to happen again. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why it says in verse 5 that her feet go down to death and
yeah.
her steps lay hold of hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one of those, I think Proverbs as a whole is very instructive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could really write these on your heart as a child, and I'm talking to you guys, I think it would save you a lot of heartache and a lot of pain and turmoil and all of those things.
Yeah.
Because I know that I've neglected a lot of the teachings and Proverbs in my life, and I've paid for that. And
you know and that's why I think the one other thing that might have to be mentioned is the tendency we have, even though we're aware of the teaching in the scriptures, to say, oh, but this doesn't apply in this situation. And then you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's kind of what I was going to say, picking up on, is that you're going to arrive at the conclusion one way or the other
mm-hmm.
that scripture is right and it's mm-hmm. true and everything it says is right. And had I just listened to that and not followed my own path or relied on my own wisdom or what I thought was right, as my father was saying, it's like, I know in general, adultery is not good or forget adultery. Maybe
you could say in general, what, you know, the adulterous woman is being deceptive and self-seeking. But not in this case.
But you don't understand this girl. She's different.
Yeah, different.
You know
right.
I mean, I know that's that typically when a woman cheats on her husband, yes, all those things, but not with this.
Not in this case.
You don't know this girl or something like that.
Yeah.
And the devil contributes to that and our own depraved contributes to that. We have a sinful nature ourselves. And the devil exploits it. So we've got a lot of things working against us. So it's hard to be on that narrow path that leads to righteousness, but we've got to embrace these things as true, because as I was saying before, one way or the other,
you
want to learn that the stove is hot, and you're either going to have to learn it through experience or through faith in God's word.
Right. And that's verse 23. The end, the final conclusion, he will die for lack of instruction, infatuated by his great folly. In other words, he hasn't applied his heart sufficiently to the instruction that scripture brings. And he's instead infatuated by his own, the misleadings of his own heart, so to speak. You know?
I think that verse 8 is so good. I love how it says, remove your way from her and do not go near
the doorway of her house.
It's like, in other words, don't even dabble with sin. Don't kid yourself into thinking like, I won't go all the way.
Yeah.
But at the very least, I like the conversation.
Right.
I'm receiving something from.
I'm getting something out of this.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no harm in us talking.
Yeah.
But it says, good point. That's obviously very dangerous.
Yep.
Don't kid yourself with that either.
I agree.
When you're talking, you're walking down the street in your house. Yep. And when you continue conversing, you're standing at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be too long before you cross that threshold. Yep. So don't kid yourself with things like that either.
That's very wise.
Remove your way far from her and do not even go near the door of her house.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good. I want to read 6. My son, if you...
Wait, are we done?
Oh, no, you still have more. I'm sorry. Sorry. I jumped the gun.
I haven't even gone... I'm skimming.
Oh, well, we've got more to say. Okay. Go on, John. I'm sorry.
We can say more.
Yes.
Pink writes 5 to 6 chapters on each verse. He does.
I believe you.
It's astounding.
Quite amazing. That's quite amazing. Have you been reading his commentary on this?
Not on this.
Not on Proverbs. I haven't either.
As of yesterday, I finished his exposition of the Sermon on the Mount.
Mm-hmm.
And just the verse where it says, and I will say, depart from me, I never knew you.
Yeah.
That's 6 chapters.
Wow.
It's amazing. So let's see if there's anything else we can wring from this.
Sure, sure, no problem.
Maybe there isn't anything else to say.
Take a look.
Although I do like the verse 21 where it says, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. That's always something that we should be keeping in front of our mind as well. When we do things, it's like, well, my wife might not know that I'm talking
to
a woman, or my children, or my whatever, my coworkers, whatever you want to say. But you should always know that the ways of men are before the eyes of the Lord always.
That's a good point. And I think it also emphasizes another tendency, a human tendency, and that is to fear, actually end up with that we fear men more than we fear God. In other words, if somebody else is going to find out, that'll discourage us. But God,
absolutely. You know, that's absolutely well said. It's like, if you're going to cheat on your wife, it's like, well,
your wife finds out?
Consider that. Yeah. But it's like, you know that God is not going to find out. He already sees.
He already knows.
On. And that should be far more.
Yeah, it should.
So that's a good point. You know, because if you can, well, it's,
you know, like there's, that, there's another verse in Proverbs that I think it has two meanings. And the second one just came to me, I think, last week when we may have referred to it, in fact, last week. And I noticed, and it says, because sentence is not executed speedily against an evil word, an evil act, the yeah. hearts of the sons of men are set in them to do evil.
Yes.
And generally, I mean, the obvious meaning to that is because the government, if the government doesn't consistently punish things that are wrong, people are going to go around saying, oh, I can do, doesn't really matter. But I think that in context, it's almost implying that don't think that because God doesn't execute judgment immediately, he's not going to. Yeah. And because God doesn't, wrongly, man concludes that, just like with the, you know, in the human realm, oh, it doesn't matter, I can get away with it. But you're not, you may get away with it in this life, but you're not going to get away with it with God. That's what I think is the other message here.
Yeah.
In fact, if you're a child of God, you're not going to get away with it in this life, because he will discipline you to bring you back into the fold. So anyway.
Yeah, you know, that is what you said makes me think about what Pink has been writing so emphatically in those last six chapters, is that we need to stop kidding ourselves with, you know, salvation by faith alone, and therefore sinning presumptuously, which I think is what you is it goes along with this. I think a lot of times, even as Christians, it's like, yeah, well, I know I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm saved, and I'm saved by grace alone and faith alone. And so, and he does, you know, and given the circumstances, I'm going to do this, and then he'll forgive me. It's very dangerous. We need to be obedient.
Yeah. And I think that's too why the author of the Proverbs here is mentioning things like that are the practical consequences to you of your evil acts, because it's true. You may not lose your sonship, but look at the damage you're going to do to your life too.
Right. I mean, there, it's
less stranger. I mean, there are going to be practical consequences.
Well, I was thinking about that too. It's when verse 11 says, when your flesh and your body are consumed, so there's real physical associated with this as well.
Yeah. What are some of the things he mentions in this chapter? Loss of honor, loss of, you know, financial loss, physical, jeopardizing your physical health, as you've pointed out. A lot of things.
Yeah.
And it continues in the next chapter. So that's
take six, please.
Six. So, I mean, it's going to be more, this is just a continuation of the same chapter. My son, if you, except for this odd beginning, which is like a different subject for the first half of this chapter, and then he gets back into
adultery
again. But yeah. Here he said, he starts out talking about surety, which maybe we can find the relationship where he says, my son, if you've stood surety for your fellow, given your hand for another, you've been trapped by the words of your mouth, snared by the words of your mouth. Do this then, my son, to extricate yourself, for you have come into the power of your fellow. Go grovel and badger your fellow. Give your eyes no sleep, your pupils no slumber. Save yourself like a deer out of the hand of a hunter, like a bird out of the hand of a fowler. When he's talking about giving surety, it's
a pledge.
It's a pledge where you're saying, in other words, say somebody wants to give you a loan, and he's a little concerned that you're not going to pay the loan back. You can get somebody to stand surety for you, and they're saying, look, I know this guy is good. I'll stand surety for him. If he doesn't pay, you can come after me for the payment. That's what he's saying. Don't do it. Well, in one sense, it's kind of obvious. Why would you want to take on those responsibilities?
Although financial institutions have co-signers all the time.
I know. And usually they're done in the context of someone else who has a shared interest in what's being signed. No, his husband and wife buying putting in for a loan.
But also,
one person is the signer; the other person has an interest in it. So there's a reason to be a co-signer. But there, you may know of other instances that.
Well, if your child wants to get a car loan, they have zero credit. So
again,
we give that to you as a father, a signer. Sure. Because then you can be a surety for your child who has no credit of their own.
Now, why would your father sign in those cases? Well, very easily. There's a very simple reason. He wants the child to have the car.
The child establishes credit through that as well.
So the father's probably thinking, I could buy the car and give it to my son, but then I'd have to take money out of my pocket.
Yeah.
And this way we can get a loan. I'll just sign and be surety. I'm no worse off. But there are instances where you could be very much, and it's in the area of friendship. And it's sometimes hard to turn a friend down. You know, if they're coming to you and they're really desperate, oh, come on, you know I'm good for it.
Yeah.
And he says in verse 2, you've been trapped by the words of your mouth. And I think what he's suggesting is here is don't enter anything into any kind of relationship like this without full awareness of what you're doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because I was thinking where it says later on, you know, swear not at all.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's really applicable to this.
It's not exactly, although I think it is in this one sense, because in context, when he says swear not at all, he says, for you don't have the power to do, you don't have the power over heaven, or, you know, when you're swearing by heaven, or you're swearing by other things that are really ultimately beyond your control. As James would say, you don't even know if you're going to wake up tomorrow morning.
Yeah. So what's the takeaway from this passage? Is it saying if someone asks you to be a pledge for a friend or some third party agreement, don't do it? Or
I would think it means in general, don't do it, and particularly don't do it for one very bad reason, and that is when you're trying to make yourself look good. And because this, I think, is what, again, thinking back to my childhood when I did a lot of foolish things and my father would instruct me, this was one of them. When you want to be the big guy in the eyes of your friends, you know, oh, how magnanimous you are, how cooperative you are, how willing you are to go along and help out whenever you can. You don't think about the consequences. So right out of your mouth, oh, yeah, no, he's good for it. I'll back him up. I'll be sure. You're not thinking this through. In fact, if you did, you'd know already that your friend is probably not that reliable. Would you want to lend them all that money?
Right.
Because you are.
It's easy to say when it's someone else's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you're right. But if it were you who had to put up the $5,000, yeah.
would you be so willing to do it? Because in essence, you are doing it.
That's really.
If he's unreliable, then you're in essence giving him the money.
I've never lent anyone money.
What I, you know, my rule is, if you're going to lend somebody money, consider it in your mind a gift.
That's exactly what I do. I was going to say that. I've given
the only way you can do
money,
it.
I've given people money straight out.
Yeah, but even if they say, oh, no, I'll pay you back. They'll pay you back like they'll return the book they borrow.
Exactly. Man. Abby, didn't I say that? People never return books.
Yeah.
They never return books. They never return CDs.
No.
But in
when you loan us a book, you know you're never going to see it.
Yeah, no. A book, you have to hunt people down for the...
No.
For the,
so just don't... I mean, if
you... No, that's always in my mind, is that I don't lend people money, or I'll just give you the money that you need. And
yeah,
if you want to pay me back, but in my mind, I just gave you money because you needed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Because lending people money is a joke.
Yeah. Huh. Anyway.
So you want to continue with verse 6?
Sure. Now it's, in a sense, we're getting into another topic. He goes, lazy bones, go to the ant. Study its ways and learn. Without leaders, officers, or rulers, it lays up its stores during the summer, gathers in its food at the harvest. How long will you lie there, lazy bones? When will you wake from your sleep? A bit more sleep, a bit more slumber, a bit more hugging yourself in bed, and poverty will come calling upon you and want like a man with a shield.
Yeah.
I mean, I think about this verse so many times in the morning when it says a bit more slumber, a bit more hugging yourself in bed, because I feel that way an awful lot. And even reciting the verse to me, I have to struggle to get out of bed sometimes. It's a tough one. But it's...
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I don't know what to say about that. I was just going to say that this doesn't mean anything other than I used to have a hard... I was thinking about this last week. I used to wake up, especially when we were sent home. Man, I'd wake up at 9:30.
Really?
10 o'clock in the morning sometimes. Really late.
How late you stay?
Now, although I'm still working from home, I mean, I'll wake up at 5:00.
Yeah.
You know, 6 o'clock, and it's like every single morning I'm up at 6 usually by the latest. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, it is good.
But it is that indolent mentality overall, mm-hmm, that I think lends itself to that. Oh, I'm just going to sleep. I'm going to rest. I'll do it later. I'm going to put it off, which I can't stand. If there's something that needs to be done, do it now.
Yeah,
I'm very much like that. I do everything now.
Yeah,
and
good,
I can't
good practice
when people want to do things like, "Yeah, I'll do it later. I'll do that. I'm gonna sleep. I'm gonna do." And it's like your poverty will come on you like a prowler,
mm-hmm,
and you need like an armed man. It's like that's what engenders poverty. I think there's a impoverished mind.
Yeah,
that it precedes an impoverished life.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the general lack of discipline. You need...
It reminds me of something that Blake said.
Blake?
Didn't he say something about the... He wrote a whole thing about indolence, didn't he?
He may have.
Was that me?
I don't have a copy of Blake here to look. But it's probably in Songs of Experience or something.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Isn't it the clod and the pebble? Because when it says, go to the ant, you sluggard, that reminded me of something that he said.
Hmm. Check it out.
I'll have to see. You and I know, are students of Blake.
See if you can find it. I can't recall.
I don't know. I'll have to I'll have to look through.
Look it up sometime.
I think you're 100% right. It is.
Now, of course, there's Benjamin Franklin, early to bed, early to rise makes men well, healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that.
But that's different.
You know, I know we've said this before. It's so difficult to differentiate between Blake and the Proverbs because it's like they're so similar. I don't know who I'm hearing.
Yep. A lot of them.
So anyway.
Okay.
Now I think you're on verse 12.
A scoundrel, an evil man, lives by crooked speech, winking his eyes, shuffling his feet, pointing his finger. Duplicity is in his heart. He plots evil all the time. He incites quarrels. Therefore, calamity will come upon him without warning. Suddenly, he will be broken beyond repair. Crooked speech. First thing he mentions is winking with his eyes. What does that imply?
Security and assurance, I think.
Or I'm not really telling the truth, but you know that, right? And so he winks at you to signal, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. This is for other people's benefit, not yours. You know what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Whenever somebody says that, you know what I mean. In essence, that's a verbal form of winking with the eyes.
Would you say the same for, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'd say the same for that. And I'd also say the same thing for...
It's all good?
No. I'll tell you the truth.
Oh, I know.
Whenever somebody says that, I know they're lying.
I know.
Everything that's going to come
after that. I hate that. When people are like, okay, I'm going to tell you the truth. Or to be honest, it's like...
To be honest with you.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to be honest with you. It's like, I thought you were being honest all the time.
Now I know you weren't.
It's like, okay, to be honest with you, to tell you the truth. It's like, what do you mean to tell me the truth or to be honest with me? You should always be speaking honestly and truthfully.
Yeah.
Not now. Now we're arriving at honesty.
Yeah.
What were we doing before?
Well, the answer is in verse 14. Duplicity is in his heart. Six things the Lord hates. The Lord hates it too. Seven are an abomination to him. A haughty bearing. That's pride and arrogance.
Yeah, mine says a proud look.
Proud look, yeah. A lying tongue. That's pretty much what we just went over. Hands that shed innocent blood. I think the most striking thing about this is it seems so much more extremely wrong than the other two. But maybe not in God's eyes.
Yeah, that's well said. You know, like killing an innocent person is a crime. Yeah. On the other hand, a proud look or
a lying tongue.
How is that equivalent?
Yeah.
But it is.
A mind that hatches evil plots and feet that are quick to run to evil. A false witness testifying lies and one who incites brothers to quarrel. Now, some of these things can be nearly fatal, even though you may not think it. Like inciting brothers to quarrel can have devastating effects.
Yeah.
Being a false witness obviously can.
Yeah.
So they're all bad. They're all forms of the intrigue and dishonesty of one or.
Yeah.
Plotting.
No, and this is not to mention another installment of an example of how there are things that God hates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stand that one-sided, you know, God is love. You know, it's like, yes, but there are things that he hates.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that he thinks are abomination.
Right. And boy, that is.
We need to have a balance of truth.
Yep.
But what were we going to say? That is
no, what? I'm saying that's exactly what when the person who misquotes God is love, because they're misconstruing that.
Right. It just means that, yeah, God loves and everything. And therefore.
So therefore, he doesn't hate anything.
Right. He doesn't hate anything because God is love. And so he'll overlook all of our shortcomings and things like that. And it's like, no, it says clearly here in scriptures that he hates these things.
Yeah. Now, we're in verse 20. My son, keep your father's commandment. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. Tie them over your heart always. Bind them around your throat. When you walk, it will lead you. When you lie down, it will watch over you. And when you are awake, it will talk with you. For the commandment is a lamp, the teaching is a light. And the way to life is the rebuke that disciplines. And I'm going to stop here before we get into, because he's going to get into the evil woman again, because that's one of the things that this instruction will keep you from, which is what you said when we were reviewing the other chapter, when you stopped and said, you know, I wish your kids would take to heart the instruction here, because it will keep you from number of.
Yeah,
that's right.
Verse 20, it says, my son, keep your father's command, bind them continually upon your heart and tie them around your
heart. Yep.
If you do that, you'll be on the right track.
And that implies, although it's not stated here, that the parents are in fact instructing the children.
Well said.
And that's why I appreciate, even though I didn't when I was a kid, how my father used to continually instruct me when I did stupid things. And he would always reference the scriptures when he could. And those things I would remember, even though
that's great.
I didn't agree all the time. And I thought, oh, I don't know if I believe that. But then, you know, I'd go and do what I thought was right and I'd suffer the consequences. And I said, darn.
Yeah.
So listen.
I think that you said a mouthful. I mean, I think a whole sermon could be preached just on these opening or these two verses, 20 and 21. I mean, that's really well said. It's not, you know, keep the church's teaching or keep what you've learned in Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
It's your father's and your mother's. When you're right, it's implying that you're being instructed from the word at home.
Right. Yeah.
Which is what we're trying to do. I hope you guys don't see this as a...
But we're trying to do it for ourselves, too. It's not just, you know, we know everything that you guys don't.
No, we're all...
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like these things should be kept in your heart and
tied
around your neck, because they will be a light on your feet.
Yeah. Okay, for the commandment is a lamp, the teaching is a light. And the way to life is the rebuke that disciplines. It will keep you from an evil woman, from the smooth tongue of a forbidden woman. Do not lust for her beauty or let her captivate you with her eyes. Now, when it says a forbidden woman, that could mean anything that was forbidden by the Jewish law. For instance, a foreigner who was not of Jewish stock, because the Jewish people were only supposed to marry within their own community.
Yes.
But of course, it would also be true for a married woman who was also forbidden in that sense.
Mine says to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, I want to look at the... the evil woman and we can't make that up. Okay.
It says, do not lust after her beauty.
Beauty or let her captivate you with her eyes. Again, I think that's the eyes were mentioned in chapter 5, right? No, it was the tongue. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey. Her mouth is smoother than oil. Here it's saying, do not let her lust for her beauty or let her captivate you with her eyes.
Yeah.
The last loaf of bread will go for a harlot.
Yeah, mine says, for by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread. What does that mean?
This is the financial aspect of it.
I get it.
I think he's envisioning either somebody who, in modern terminology, they would call a gold digger, who's being seductive for purposes of, you know, taking advantage of your money, or your, that could be one thing, or someone who's addicted to going to harlots and prostitutes. They're going to be putting out a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay.
But goes on, a married woman will snare a person of honor. And there's, can a man rake embers into his bosom without burning his clothes? Can a man walk on live coals without scorching his feet? It's the same with one who sleeps with his fellow's wife. None who touches her go unpunished. The thief is not held in contempt for stealing to appease his hunger. Yet if caught, he must pay sevenfold. He must give up all he owns. He who commits adultery is devoid of sense. Only one who would destroy himself does such a thing. He will meet with disease and disgrace. His reproach will never be expunged. The fury of the husband will be passionate. He will show no pity on his day of vengeance. He will not have regard for any ransom. He will refuse your bribe, however great. No.
Okay, well.
Okay.
Let's continue with chapter 7, I guess.
Okay, we'll do 7 also. John, you can start again.
My son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you. Keep my commands and live, and my law as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers, write them on the tablet of your heart. Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your nearest kin, that they may keep you from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. For at the window of my house, I looked through my lattice and saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner, and he took the path to her house in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. I'm going to stop for a second.
Yeah.
That harkens back to what I was saying in chapter 5 with do not go near the door of her house.
Yeah, right.
Here we have the young man who is devoid of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And he's seen passing along the street near her corner.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes the path which leads to her house, which is right. Exactly what I was saying before. It's a progressive sin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As is all sin.
Yep.
And he's doing this in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night, again, thinking that no eye will see him, although we've again learned from chapter 5 that the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord.
Or another thing that could be here, and this shows the subtlety of sin too, he may not at this point even be contemplating committing adultery, but he's put himself in a position where temptation can come to him because he's near the door of her house, and he's also in a position of temptation because of the circumstances of it being evening. Now you say, well, being by somebody's house isn't wrong, being out at night isn't wrong, but the two things have the potential to enhance the temptation of the situation. Because when the woman does appear, that's when the temptation starts to intensify. And the fact that it's evening, like you say, then right away the thought comes, well, nobody knows, nobody can see.
Is that why sinful behavior is done predominantly at night?
That's what the Bible says. It says that the evil person, you know, they love the darkness.
Yeah.
I think in Psalms there's several instances.
I think Psalms 37. You know, everything that is sinful is really encouraged at night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, is the correlation just because you think that you're not being seen, but like spiritually seen?
I think it could have implications beyond that. The association of darkness with evil. You know,
naturally they have a natural disposition to be attracted to
when we were kids, and we were going out looking for trouble, so to speak, we always loved to go out at night. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There was something about it that made you feel invincible. I don't know if you ever had that feeling. I'm not saying this is good, but I'm just saying that's something I perceived in myself. And I always used to say, man, you feel like you become part of, like, one with the darkness.
Huh.
I don't know if everybody feels that way, but I could see how it would motivate people to commit evil acts.
Whereas, yeah, I think it's just that contrast between light and mm-hmm. darkness.
Yeah.
You're certainly more emboldened to do things.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, let's continue.
So where are we? I forgot.
Verse 10. I'll continue.
Okay.
And there a woman met him. So now, I'm sorry, put things back in context. This is the young man who is devoid of understanding. Yeah. Passing along the street, he's taking the path towards her house in the
mm-hmm. night.
And there a woman meets him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Man, I'm going to stop there.
Yeah.
I think loud women are rebellious and mm-hmm. are promiscuous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what else to say other than that. I don't like loud women. They're rebellious.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so she has the attire of a harlot, a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. Now, I'm going to stop.
Yeah.
We just said in chapter 5 that she wasn't going out there trying to entrap people.
But this one is.
This one certainly is. She's lurking at every corner. Sometimes she's outside. Sometimes she's in the open squares. And she caught him and kissed him. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I said when I said that she wasn't in verse 5, I was showing that it wasn't necessarily that she was.
Right.
But yeah. Of course it could be.
So I also think it's interesting where it says, I have peace offerings with me. Today I've paid my vows. That made me think of those who say peace, peace, when there is no peace.
You know what all this reminded me of? You know this, the Rolling Stones song, It's All Over Now? I mean,
yeah.
the lines, I'm just pulled it up here. Baby used to stay out all night long. She made me cry. She'd done me wrong. And then it goes, well, she used to run around with every man in town, spent all my money playing her high class game.
Yeah.
Now she's here and there with every man in town, still trying to take me for that same old clown. Just the wording of that just reminds me of this so much.
It's very similar. Hmm. Okay, so verse 14. I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face, and I have found you.
Mm-hmm.
I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks.
Mm.
Till an arrow struck his liver, as a bird hastens to the snare. He did not know what it would cost his life. Now, therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray into her paths, for she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death.
Hmm. Yeah. My version says her house is the highway to hell, the Sheol, which...
I'm on a highway to hell.
Yeah.
No. What can we say? I thought that this verses 21 through 23 are so powerful.
Yeah.
When she captures him and kisses him and
yeah.
does all these things, and she's like, "I've prepared my bed; it's perfumed, and furthermore, mm-hmm. my husband's gone. He's on a long journey, and we have the let's fill ourselves with love." Until mm-hmm. the point. And it's like with that speech, she caused him to yield and she seduced him. And I love how it says in verse 22, immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
He did not know it would cost his life.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, very good.
Well.
So I think we've completed the section on the perils of adultery and fornication too, for that matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess we'll stop there for today.
This time. Well,
I thought this was a very good study.
Okay, next time we're on, just to let me make a note so I don't
forget.
Proverbs. What we just did.
Finished seven.
Seven, so we'll be on Proverbs 8.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
All right, Dad.
Bye-bye now.
All right, bye-bye.